Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey, everybody, I'm Rachel Goodman, and we're back for Shrill, Season 2, Episodes 3 and 4. Joining me today, we have our Shrill enthusiast, Angel.
Hey, guys, Angel Taylor.
I feel like it's been forever, but the truth is, we are back after the last episode where we talked about 1 and 2, but be sure to stay tuned until the end. We have a special segment on curvy women. Yes, and we have some news, and we're going to try to do predictions. I have not seen anything beyond these two episodes, so it might be easier for me. Anjel, you've seen up through 7.
I'm going to give you some predictions.
Okay, you can still give us predictions.
Yeah.
And, you know, if anybody, so just, you know, FYI, if we get to predictions and you've seen the entire show, some of this might be, you know, like a moot point to you. But all right, well, let's dive right in. Let's
watch
talk about
it anyway.
Yeah, you might be entertained by our predictions, even if we're completely wrong or I'm completely wrong.
We usually are, but it's okay.
Yeah, you can laugh at me if you want. So episode 3 was Skate. This big episode, this was one of my favorites so far. Mm-hmm. You know, just because I feel like we got a lot of telling things between Ryan and Annie. Mm-hmm. I mean, that ending where, you know, I know we're kind of doing this out of order, but that ending where, one, we finally got that word where Ryan and Annie were able to exchange that they loved each other. That, to me, really, I mean, that was, what did you think of that?
I have mixed emotions about it because I want Annie to move on.
Yeah.
From Ryan. But, I mean, if that's where she's going to be, then, you know, love wins.
Yeah. And that was why I wanted to talk about this first, because at the end, toward the end of our show discussing 1 and 2, mm-hmm. one of the conversations where we had started was about Ryan and Annie and whether they should be together. And this was the moment for me near the end where I was like, okay, they do have something very special. But I think my problem with it is that if we go back to the skating party, we had that whole moment where Annie is drunk and she goes to Ryan and she's like, hey, like, and she was clearly drunk and Ryan wasn't on anything. So he has no excuse for not recognizing this in her.
But yeah, she goes to him. She needed to go home immediately and she had a small cry for help and he wasn't like intelligent enough to pick up and catch on. Like, come on, dude.
And I feel like he's dumb all around, but he's especially, his emotional IQ is especially low. Yeah. And so for him, she was, if this had been me, or like if this had been somebody I, like even if it was the opposite, if it had been somebody I cared about, somebody especially who, you know, you're in a relationship with, if they come to you and they're drunk like that, you should know when they're not okay, and you should know not to let them go off by themselves and themselves. And she was obviously hurting and dealing with a lot, and he just said, no, you're cool. And while it was very sweet and supportive, so at least it wasn't, it's not like
he was trying to like pump her up and trying to get her like, yeah, I got this, go back at him, you know, type of thing. But she had already lied her heart out about everything.
And she was not okay. And I get that he was being supportive and saying she was fine. And in one regard, that's amazing. Like, he is being supportive, but he shouldn't have left her. And he should have walked around with her. And he should have asked her, he should have really talked to her more. The contrasting relationship is when she went to Amadi. She didn't even go to him for help. And he was like, oh, girl, you're drunk. Like, you need to. And he stepped in and talked to her. That is, she should not need to go to somebody else for that.
Well, Ryan was trying to get back to the game.
Yeah.
Ryan was trying to get back to the game that everybody loses. So, and whatever. I mean, it's like watching a mouse chase the cheese.
And that's the problem I have, though, is that we get this entire situation at the skating rink where he was not, in my opinion, being a very good boyfriend. But they at the end, where she's throwing up, he was being a very sweet and gentle guy.
My question about the end, and I don't want to jump, but I have to address this. Why are you throwing up in the tub instead of the toilet that you can actually flush? Why is Ryan having to scoot the throw up into the drain? Like, they just don't make sense.
Unless she got sick. Like, they didn't show this, but I'm just going to assume that she got sick so fast that she ran wherever she could run.
Most restrooms, the toilet and the tub are across from each other, so they're actually the same distance apart from the door.
I assumed we had fast-forwarded and we were in, you know, one of their apartments.
Which we were, and in this shot, the tub, like, as you entered, was to the far right, and the toilet was across it, like any other restroom, to the left.
Yeah.
And I just think that it's crazy that, I mean, not only did they throw up in the tub, it was the back of the tub and not towards the drain.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just this common sense thing. The drain is closer to the door anyway. So you took an extra step just to make more work for yourself.
And most people will go toward the toilet, even if it hadn't been drinking.
Even if it's the sink. Yeah. And you know the sink is the closest thing to the door. So. Yeah. It's just a common sense thing. Like, it didn't make sense.
Yeah. But in terms of their relationship, I think it was a tender moment. It deeply contrasted with what had happened earlier, where even though he was being sweet and it's like you can't really fault him for anything exactly, he should have stuck around with her and stay and actually talk to her. And you know what? Like, he should know. He's known her long enough that he should know that something's not right. So I was feeling bad for her, because what can she do? And it's like, you can't make somebody be different than what they are. And I don't think she was upset by it.
She wasn't.
Yeah.
She felt empowered after talking to him for some strange reason. Yeah. But she's drunk. She wasn't thinking with her best brain either.
She felt empowered for that second, but then as she walked away, it was like, what am I doing? I can't do this, which is exactly why
she had the meltdown, and she ended up telling Amadi, hey, I lied about everything, and I'm a big loser right now.
And he knew, like, he
and did, I need my job back.
Yeah, exactly. So before we talk a little bit more about Amadi, let's take a quick moment to give an announcement for everybody listening at home.
Hey, AfterBuzz TV fans, thank you so much for listening and tuning in. We love to read your comments, so jump into the comments. Let us know what you think. If you have a different perspective, we love hearing you out. We love shouting you out right here on air. If you're on YouTube, give us a thumbs up and subscribe. If you're on iTunes, give us 5 stars and jump to the comments there. And thank you for allowing us to be the ESPN of TV Talk. Tell your friends.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you guys so much for being the best part of AfterBuzz TV. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Amadi, because, all right, we had that whole moment where, like, we were talking last episode about how he was having a crisis, and I couldn't talk about that this yet, because obviously we were still in 1 and 2, mm-hmm. but this is where I felt like he was having a huge, like, issue with his age, when he was talking to those kids, and they were like, oh, what's this song? And it was Captain and Tennille. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that really, I mean, okay, Captain and Tennille, like, it was a Studio 54 theme. Mm-hmm. And okay, fine. Like, I was born in 87. I was not around during the 54.
I'm older than you? Oh my gosh. I'm always the oldest one in the room.
Wait, what year?
86.
Okay. So we're about the same age, but I was still very familiar with the music they were playing. Uh-huh. And this is like, you know, mid-70s. Yeah. So those kids, like, come on, get an education.
First of all, one of them was dressed like Chucky.
Yeah.
And I was like, why?
Yeah. And the one...
Was Chucky 70s? No, that was 90s, right?
That was later. I don't know exactly when Chucky was, but okay. Chucky was definitely around when I was a kid.
When I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know if it was just Chucky. Early 90s. Yeah. So Chucky was definitely around.
Overalls and stripes.
Yeah. Let's go. But the whole thing is that I felt like, you know, they were calling him Grandpa. Ruthie was calling him Grandpa. I felt bad for him because he doesn't, I just feel like he's not comfortable in his body right now because he can't figure out where he really belongs in terms of, like, his age.
His vibe is super youthful. Do you see what he wears to work?
That's the thing. I think that for him...
He's a teenage boy.
Yeah. And that's the problem is that he is a teenage boy from a certain era.
Another midlife crisis.
And he is still, like, you know how... I mean, I can even speak for myself. Like, I'm 32 now, but I don't feel any different than I did when I was 21, except for, obviously...
Oh, go, girl!
Like, I don't feel any different. Obviously, it's, like, 11 more years of experience and memories I didn't have before.
Right.
But I still like the same things, and I still, like, you know... I just like the same things.
I like more. I feel like my world has expanded so much more.
Yeah.
And I'm so much more well-rounded now.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a very normal, that's a normal thing to happen to people.
My muscles and my joints are not the same.
And see, I don't feel like, yeah, but the whole point is that I don't feel physically or mentally much different. And I feel like that's what he's going through. It's the same exact thing.
But because, he's older than us, given.
Oh, yeah. He's got to be. No, sorry, no offense.
yeah, he's like late 40s.
I would guess, yeah. Now, he's, like. I believe his name is Michael Connelly, right? Yeah, we can look that up in a second, but he is one of the writers on the show as well.
Nice.
And he was just like, you know, I feel like with him, it's an identity crisis related to his age. And the problem isn't so much like when you think of someone who's normally having a midlife crisis, they go out and they start doing things differently and they buy a new car and they cut their hair and they try to fit in with the young crowd. That's not what he's doing. I think it's more or less.
He already did it.
Yeah.
He has skunk hair and he dresses like a skateboard punk rock and type 16-year-old.
And I think what it is that he probably dressed like that when he was a teenager and or maybe in his early 20s and it just never changed. And now he's struggling with, oh, I really am getting older. And it's, you know, starting to actually bug him. And so the thing with him, though, is that on top of this, we see this scene where he's going to take the drugs. Now, it was ketamine, but obviously it looked just like cocaine.
Yes,
it is
a
way you can take ketamine.
I thought it was cocaine.
He thought it was cocaine, too. But they did. Ruthie and, you know, I think the kids were there. Ruthie did warn him, you know, you want to take like an eighth of what you would normally do with cocaine. And he was like, no, I got this. And he literally just, I thought he was going to overdose. I thought that that's where this was headed.
I thought he was going to die this episode.
Yeah. I was very concerned for him. But that was the whole thing is that he's trying to act like how he used to act because he's just never changed. The whole thing with him is that my other concern was that I was worried he wasn't going to remember when he had that conversation with Annie.
I was afraid about that too, but I don't know because it's funny because he seemed totally functional even though he was out of it and in the room by himself when they had the conversation. He seemed functional and interactive enough to have like known what he was talking about.
So,
and then at the end, he like snapped out.
I thought that he was out of it from the moment she walked in. But the problem is she was out of it, too. So she didn't recognize that he was out of it. And right. So but he did have lucid moments where he would like talk to her. And it was like, OK, it's just Gabe talking and he's fine. But then at the end, we saw that they had to take him home. And I thought, yeah. And I loved that moment at the end, by the way.
It was cute. Yeah. And then Ryan helped tote him out. And that was a little cute moment.
Yeah. And then obviously Annie was still not sober, but they got him an Uber anyway or a Lyft or whatever it was and had somebody help him home.
If it was a boyfriend of mine and, I mean, Gabe has been her nemesis. So, like, a boyfriend, a loving boyfriend, if he knows you've been struggling in the workplace with a specific person, he's not going to help you carry this person out and home to safety. So Ryan is so cute in a way. He didn't ask any questions and he just helped her and whatever her initiative was.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah. He's very easygoing like that, Ryan. Mm-hmm. So I want to move on and talk about episode 4. We had a little bit with Fran in 3, though. The biggest thing I want to mention, because it's going to carry over, is her telling her group of friends that she had not had sex in weeks, which is completely different for her. Yeah. But I'm mentioning it now because we do see more of that in 4. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about episode 4, which is called Freak. And the reason it's called Freak is because Annie does get her job back and she goes and she's assigned to cover Freak of the Week at the newspaper. One thing I want to mention, as I was watching this, when they found their freak, it was a guy who was dressed naked on a bike.
Right.
As I'm watching this.
Full-blown penis.
Yeah. And so
and balls.
I'm very familiar with Portland. I've been there a bunch of times. I love the city. One of the things that I was thinking when I saw this was, oh, this is something they actually do. Because it is. It's not just, like, this guy wasn't really I guess he's a freak because he's doing it all the time. But in Portland, there is actually something called World Naked Bike Ride. It's a day Woo-hoo! Where literally people go on their bikes together and they go butt naked and they bike around. Mm. There is even etiquette for it. And one of those things, I'm just going to read this.
Tell me some of this etiquette. I want to hear this.
So it's basically, from what I was reading, there's like 10 major things. It's pretty obvious. It's like, don't make lewd comments. Don't touch people inappropriately if they don't want you to. And, you know, kind of it goes along that vein.
Okay.
But then the one that I found hilarious, this is like the final etiquette that I just kind of like was seeing on multiple sites. So there's mm-hmm. really no, like, it's just kind of a thing that people sort of acknowledged.
Right.
Wear a helmet and proper illumination. So it was like, even though you're naked, you
have to illuminate.
Exactly. Well, and the helmet thing, apparently in Oregon, you have to wear a bike helmet. So it's like, yeah, you can go naked, which surprises me, but wear your helmet. But in any case, let's talk about the episode. We'll get back to the Freak of the Week plot line in a second. But the one thing I wanted to talk about was Fran.
Mm-hmm.
She had her arc has been very fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved her solo date idea.
Yeah.
Like, to date herself. That's really dope. And it takes a lot for a woman to go out in public by her lonesome, because we feel out of place and rejected and, I don't know, weird to date ourselves, like to be alone. And, like, even me, when I take myself out to salsa and beer and I'm by myself, or any restaurant for that matter, people are looking at me like I'm waiting on someone, or like I got stood up, when I'm just simply having a meal by myself.
Yeah.
I want to be alone. And so, yeah, I mean, that's a thing that women go through, especially women that are deemed like attractive. We can't like be anywhere alone. Like, what is that about? Why are you questioning me?
Thanks for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. If you didn't know, we do over 100 different after shows a week for your favorite TV series. We do it in podcast and video form, and it's never been easier to start your own podcast to get in with us and talk about the things you love. If you've ever thought about it, go to anchor.fm/start to start your own podcast. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. Now, Anchor can match you with sponsors who want to advertise on your show and get you paid right away. Doing over 100 shows a week, it makes it so much easier to be able to cut out things that we want to cut out and insert things that we want to insert to make the show the quality that you, the fans, deserve. So, if you've always wanted to start a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start. That's anchor.fm/start to join us and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. I can't wait to hear it.
I will
Why
say,
are you looking at me?
In my Yeah, in my experience, it's been the same thing. Like, if I, because I like being alone sometimes.
I like my own company.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you can't just go out to a restaurant, because people will say, oh, where's your boyfriend? Is it just you? Yes.
Oh my gosh, showing up at a bar and I just want to drink by myself. People think they have to accompany me. Yeah. No, I don't want drink company. Thank you.
Yeah.
But I don't want you to buy it either. I'm good.
So I appreciated Fran and doing this. And she, you know.
And karaoke. That was a very bold move.
So the thing.
And she could actually sing.
She was amazing.
She was blowing. That was one of the hardest songs you could possibly sing. So, Lady Gaga killed it. But Fran hit it over the head as well.
Yeah. So she, what she was singing is Shallow from A Star Is Born.
You know, I loved it.
She killed it. But I think the most telling thing for me is the unicorn going around, you know, in the back. Because she specifically said, I am like a unicorn, never letting anybody in. I am the unicorn. And I was like, wow, that is that's perfect for her. And that's why I'm thinking with her.
How do unicorns not let anyone in?
Well, because of the horns. I think that's what she was saying. So I think that was what she was getting at, is that there's a horn. And so it kind of like anytime she tries to let anybody in, there's a spike there. So that's what she was getting at. Okay. Yeah, it was a little, she was definitely high.
And then the drugs she took before she went there.
So. Yeah, yeah. But I got what she was saying. And I was sober when I watched the episode.
Are you sure?
Yeah. So I understood. And so the whole thing is that watching this happen, watching her like sing this song, number one, what I found fascinating is the from anyone who's not familiar with A Star Is Born, the plot behind it, the fact that this was the penultimate love song between the couple, and she chooses this song, I felt like she is crying out because she wants to find her perfect person. She just hasn't found that person yet, and I think she's been burned so many times that
she's been burned so many times. She does the burning.
But I think that she did the burning because of being burned. I think it started the other way around.
That's let's hear a backstory then, because I need one badly.
Yeah, because that's there's a trigger with why somebody is doing that to other people. Mm-hmm. It isn't just, you don't just start breaking hearts normally. I mean,
right,
I
choose to be everyone is intrinsically good.
Well, no, but I choose to be optimistic and believe that under normal circumstances, people choose to be the better person and will not just go and break someone's heart. But also, there's a difference when you see somebody who just seems like they're just a jerk for no reason versus Fran, who you can feel her layers.
Yeah.
So I feel like she was hurt, and that's why she ended up getting into multiple relationships the way that she was.
Right.
That there was a reason. So I feel bad for her, and I do want to hear more about the backstory.
Me too.
Yeah. So
I love Fran.
We had all of this going on with Fran. The other big thing was Ryan meeting the parents. Awkward, right?
Yes. The whole thing was awkward. Annie's little run-in with her mom, like the bantering back and forth about the fat shaming, food shaming comments. That was just really weird. And I'm kind of over this whole fight that she has with her mom about food.
Yeah. And it's interesting. So Julia Sweeney is the woman who plays her mother. Mm-hmm. She's also a writer on the show. And she was, I'm not sure if this was discussed last season, but she is actually from SNL as well.
Oh.
Back in like the late 80s, early 90s, she played Pat, among other characters. Mm. But I feel like it's interesting for me watching her play the mother role, and specifically play a role where everything's about food for her. Because I think it just shows that, one, there was a generation where mothers believed they were doing the right thing by treating their daughters like this, because they felt, oh, well, I'm helping them have a happier life, or, you know, whatever was going through their mind. But it's just, you know, it's interesting to see how somebody around her age might treat their daughter, and especially with bringing a guy around. Even then, the other thing that kept going through my mind is that people like her mother who say, oh, you know, don't put the bread in front of me, I'm going to eat it all, they're the people who closet eat the most.
Yes. Okay. So when I was married, my husband, he was going through a fitness competition, and he was doing like bodybuilding and physique competition, and everybody in the house had to eat his diet. Basically, we all had to, no salt diet, fish, no carbs. And I mean, I had to weigh his food as well. So it was pretty intense in the household. And I felt like I was being punished for a goal he had.
Yeah.
So it was weird. But in a way, I saw how it helped support him and keep him focused. And I didn't want to take anything away from him or give him any temptation. And I wanted to have this unity where it's like, okay, well, if you go through the trenches, I'll go through with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. And one of the things that, you know, just going through and like going, like even for me and my experiences, whenever I've talked to, you know, a dietitian or just, you know, any doctor in general, one of the things I've heard as a common theme was, well, if you're going to eat X, then anyone living with you, like, it's kind of, like, for me, like, to have certain foods in the house.
It's
if
like,
you
don't buy it.
Yeah. 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 Like, you're probably going to eat what's in the house just yeah. because it's there. And yeah. so it was always like, I remember one time, you know, this a dietitian telling me, well, you should tell your entire family to get rid of, you know, junk foods because then you will eat it too.
Yeah.
And so it's just interesting for me thinking about that in the back of my mind. And then kind of seeing how her mother is, because I can only imagine that when Annie was growing up, the way, like, if her mother's acting like this now, I can only imagine the way that she acted as Annie was growing up, which to me makes me think, okay, well, this is Annie's way of rebelling by not listening to her mother. But yes. also, her mother's crazy about it, too. Like, there's a way to live, and there's not, like, her mother's so obsessed with food that it's counterproductive and it's just going to make people go nuts.
Yeah, I don't really see her getting smaller from episode to episode either. So she's not doing something. She's being a hypocrite in some type of way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's at a certain point, I loved the conversation that she had with, you know, Annie's father, where basically it was, you know, her dad saying, you know, she's an adult. There's a way to talk to her. You're not going to get through to her by acting the way that you are.
Yes.
And I hope that it this message actually came across, like actually got through to her mom's head. But I am thinking it won't.
Another conversation that I thought was pretty powerful between Annie and her dad was at the restaurant when they both went to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And they met each other in the hallway. And she's like trying to get some type of like she was trying to get him to validate her relationship. Like, so what do you think of Ryan? And he's just like, I don't think anything. I barely know him. And he's trying to like in a safe way say, well, I'm not going to vouch for this guy at all. And it was just, it was kind of heartbreaking to see her needing that validity from her dad. Like, she needed that support, like, to say, yes, you're doing a good job. Because I think it was pretty obvious Ryan blew the whole thing.
Yeah.
Just from talking.
I think, though, in all fairness to Ryan, he was going to blow the whole thing no matter what.
No matter what.
Yeah.
But it's just the fact that Annie felt like she needed her dad's approval.
Yeah.
And dad, please make me feel like I'm doing something right for a change.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And that was one other thing to mention too at the very end, where there Annie and Ryan were getting ice cream and they were still talking about all this. And again, Ryan cuts to sex. And it's like, okay, this is why I don't think the relationship is gonna end well, because
he's not a man of substance.
No.
And Annie is all substance. In fact, she's a writer.
She's a writer. And
that's how much substance she has.
And I can even, like, vouch, like, I am a writer. If I, in relationships I, you know, have, or, like, even friendships, when I say that word relationship, it is hard to have a friend even when there's not substance to the conversation. Because when you're a writer, words are your everything. And so if someone can't use their words at a certain level, you just kind of, like, it's hard to connect with that person.
Right.
And so that's why, like, I feel for Annie, because she's a writer like me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, yeah, how are you in this relationship? I feel so bad for you. Why? Mm-hmm. But because he's not a bad guy, but he's just not on her level.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It would be difficult for writers to maintain good manageable relationships, because especially out here in LA, when people are so fickle and so superficial, and they're really not talking about a lot that is of substance. They're talking about everything that is like aesthetically beautiful and, you know, not digging deep and getting into, like, you ask someone how they're doing, everyone, fine, you know, and nothing more. there's nothing gritty about anything that they're expressing about themselves. They're very much like to the point of being like, it's almost like they don't have a soul that they want you to see.
Yeah.
It's like they don't want you to get in. They're going to wall any type of real conversation that you have. You just like they avoid it at all costs.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's hard, too, in a different way, because somebody could still be intellectually on your level. But if they're not looking at the same things the way that you are, it's again, it's like the connection's just not going to be there.
The motives, though.
Yeah.
Like, why are they even talking to you?
Yeah.
They have some other thing that they're thinking. Maybe you have a connection and they don't want to talk about this. They want to talk about this. So if you're not feeding into their purpose, then you're not going to get what you need from them or from the conversation,
I should say. Yeah. So let's go ahead with the time that we have left. Let's dive into our segments. Our first one is our Curvy Woman Spotlight.
Curvy Woman. So I love to talk about curvy women because I am a curvy woman. I have my curves and I love my curves. Okay, so spotlight on Lizzo. Her real name is Melissa Vivian Jefferson. She's 31 years old from Detroit, Michigan. Bet you didn't know that. Her birthday is April 27th. She was born in 1988, so she's 31 years old. She's right up under you.
Yeah.
So, congratulations to Lizzo. She won the Grammys. Not just one, not just two, but she won three. One for pop solo performance for Truth Hurts. The Urban Contemporary Album, Cause I Love You, Traditional R&B Performance, Jerome, Take Your Ass Home. Sorry. And then she was also nominated for Album, Song, New Artist, The Record Truth Hurts, R&B Performance. I mean, she is unstoppable. Everyone is just loving her to death. She plays the flute. She's a beast. She's a singer. She's in your face. She's matter of fact. She's loving on herself, and she's making everyone else love on themselves. Like, her love for her body and, like, no self-doubt, it is contagious, and it's the type of energy we need in this world. Please, Lord, let's have more Lizzo in this world.
And she is just, I follow Lizzo on Twitter too, the way I follow Roxane Gay, and Lizzo is so supportive. There was a tweet too, like, just in general, she's very like pro people being who they are. But like, there was one tweet she put out that it was actually maybe about a month ago that still will probably forever stick with me in my mind. She said that in 2009, she was homeless. Like, it was like a comparison of the decades. 2009, she was homeless, like pretty much broke. 2019, she was buying her mother a house. So she was like, she was like, in 10 years, anything can happen. Yes. Look at my life. Yes. It can be you too. It doesn't just have to be
it's
me.
It's so inspiring.
Yeah. So I love her messages. I love her positivity. She seems like a down to earth person.
Oh, and she is. Yeah. I mean, her music, just listen to her lyrics. She is like basically having the conversation we all have with our girls.
Yeah.
She's just like singing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm a fan too.
Which takes us into news and gossip. Yes.
So let's talk about our news.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Okay. So news today is from a Vogue article that was published a little bit earlier in the month. Well, yeah, like 2 days ago. Actually, wait, today is the 27th. I take that back. It was published today. So this is really news. It's Shrill's second season gives its characters room to grow. Woo! I'm just going to read like a couple of excerpts here, short ones. But basically, one of them is, in the first season, we really used Wes's book as a map. And going into season two, we had already built that foundation and just got to get into the fun bit. Bryant tells me at New York, this is from the writer of the article, that Brian was talking to her about this in, you know, when they were talking at the Beekman Hotel in New York, it sounds like. We got to leave some of the body positivity behind and get into the nitty gritty of Annie and Fran's lives. So really, this article is just covering how the characters are allowed to grow and change, especially now that they've had the season one and that they're not following the book as much. So they kind of have a lot more room. Bryant, who plays Annie, she has big dreams for Annie. That doesn't include losing weight, by the way. I wanted to highlight that because this doesn't have, like, to me, I am very happy they are not going that direction because they don't need to. But chief among them, I want her to find a sort of inner peace. That is the ultimate goal here in the show. And then there's one little other excerpt. The term self-care gets thrown around a lot, but we agree that an episode in which a post-breakup friend gets high, eats a burrito, and sings karaoke alone might just be its platonic definition. This is a quote. She's not drunk or embarrassing herself, really. She's just having quite a lovely time by herself. Yes, very, very positive. You should definitely go and read the article. It is full of information. Let's kind of do predictions.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Do you want to predict anything since you've seen? Because you said you did have a prediction.
My prediction has to do with Ryan and Annie.
What's the prediction?
I think that she is going to... I mean, the meeting with the parents tanked. When someone asked her about it, she lied and said... You know, it was okay when it really wasn't.
Yeah.
It was a crash and burn for all of us. It was kind of difficult to watch. But I think that will begin to develop, and it's kind of like a seed that's going to grow in her mind, how she has to outgrow his behavior at some point, because it's going to bring her down. It's pretty stifling.
Yeah.
Like, notice when you have friends who are not on your level. You have to let them go at some point, because dragging them along is too heavy for the journey that you're on.
And we do sometimes outgrow people, too. Oh, it's just, you know, fact of life. Yeah. So my thing is that I feel like with Fran, this is going to be a huge journey season for her. And we're going to see her actually... I kind of hope she stays single, and that she continues to date herself, because I think that all along that's what she had to do. Mm-hmm. Even moments like that where she's up and she's doing karaoke, she had certain realizations she probably would not have had by having those shallow relationships that were just about sex, really, for her. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like, I want to see her date herself and learn how to love herself.
Yes, as you can't, all should.
Yeah, because sometimes, not, I'm going to say every case is different, mm-hmm. but with Fran, I feel like it's going to be a case where she will not be able to love somebody else until she fixes her inner demons and loves herself for who she is. So yes. We're gonna
that's
have to
the prerequisite.
Yeah, so that's my prediction with her. I think there's gonna be a big blow up between Annie and her mother. That's my other prediction.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like toward the end of two, I would like to see Annie actually kind of blow up at her mom so that her mom knows that there are boundaries and she cannot be doing certain things anymore.
Yeah, they need to stop skirting past the issue and just flush it out, because it's so awkward. It's the white elephant between them.
Absolutely. Well, that about wraps up our episode for today. Anjel, where can everybody find you?
Hey guys, you can find me Anjel Taylor _ on Instagram, Twitter. Find me on Facebook under my name, Anjel Taylor, A-N-G-E-L-E.
Awesome. And I'm Rachel Goodman. You can find me on Twitter at Rach Goodman, or on my author Instagram account at Rachel Radner Author. I'm also on the Stumptown, the Young and the Restless, the Doctor Who. And I think that's it. Those are my AfterBuzz panels right now. Aside from Shrill, we have, you know, four more episodes to cover. So we will be back sometime this week. Until then, we will catch you later. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.